It ain't the left side or the right side, then it must be the fin side. It ain't the left side or the right side.
Good morning, Dolphins fans. Welcome here to another episode of On the Fin Side with Kat and Paul. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, all of our social media outlets, as well as the Fan Sided Network and FinFanatic.com. We're about 9 weeks away from the Dolphins' first preseason game. Seems so far away. And today we're talking about, we're starting our positional breakdown here at the top with the quarterback position. It's a position I'm sure nobody wants to hear about. Not a lot of mystery about who's going to be on the roster. Tua is the starter. Jacoby Brissett signed in the offseason to a one-year contract, is going to be backing him up, has a lot of experience, which we'll get into. So, obviously, this is the talk of the town right now, Paul, with Tua's recent comments, which, you know, even though I talked about, I wish he hadn't said what he said, has been certainly overblown. Ryan Clark on ESPN actually said it perfectly. When asked that question, you lie. Again, I'm a huge proponent of lying to the media when it comes to things like this. And this is an example why. Because you've got to spend weeks and weeks answering the question, making you look like you didn't even try last year, which obviously we know isn't the case.
No, and you know what? Like, look, we all knew before Miami drafted him, Tua is just built different. Like, he's a different personality. He's a different type of guy. It's you want a guy that's going to come out and lie to your face about himself. That's nothing we've seen from Tua so far. And you know, he does hold himself accountable, so if he feels like he should have known the playbook better, he's gonna say that. Like, I don't care. You know, my issues really were, was he going to be able to build the leg strength back up? And good Lord, it looks like he's built it up in spades. His legs are starting to look like A.J. Dillon's out there. I'm almost getting worried now.
Hey, Dolphins fans. The Olympics, Euros, baseball, major championships, concerts, on the fin side. All of those are in this summer. You know what isn't? A wild and hairy bush. Tame your pubes with help from our friends at Manscaped, the leaders in below-the-waist grooming. Their fourth-generation performance package includes the brand new Lawnmower 4.0. If an athlete treats their body like royalty, why not treat your pubes like Olympic gold? Fellas, do right by your balls and join the 2 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped by going with the code FANSIDED20. The world is starting to open up, Dolphin fans, and the Performance Package 4.0 for Manscaped is here to help you get ready. Inside, you'll find their Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer, Weed Whacker ear and nose hair trimmer, Crop Preserver ball deodorant, Crop Reviver toner, plus two free gifts, Performance Boxer Briefs and the Shed Travel Bag. Talk about a world-class dismount into a post-quarantine world. This package is the perfect package for your package and peak performance in whatever sport you desire. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code FANSIDED20 at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping with the code FANSIDED20 at manscaped.com. Achieve pubic glory this year with Manscaped. Your balls will thank you.
Right, and we've seen a lot of footage with Tua and looking like a different player as far as being able to drive from the hip last year. And that was so much the problem, because the difference with Tua compared to other quarterbacks, look, Justin Herbert can drop back and he's got the size, he's got the arm strength, he can mask certain things. Tua cannot do that. And here's what we knew that coming out. He's 6'1". He doesn't have the greatest arm. It's the way that you develop Tua has to be and build around Tua is the way that the Saints did with Drew Brees. I'm not comparing Tua to Brees, but it all has to fit. Tua has to know the playbook. He has to be able to make changes at the line of scrimmage. The timing has to be down. He has to be well protected, and he has to be able to step into his throws. If that all doesn't fit, it's not going to work for Tua. But what I like is that when you take a look at how the Dolphins have drafted, you know, four of their five offensive line starters over the last 2 years, they can grow together. You look at Parker, Gesicki, Miles Gaskin, Will Fuller, and Jalen Waddle as your five options on offense. he's got it, at least on paper, moving forward, he's got what he needs to be able to have it all fit together.
He's got a better set of tools around him, absolutely. Not just those five, but the depth there. He's got, you know, a year of experience. He's got probably a better playbook now than what he had last year. I think they probably kept what worked for him last year, threw out all the stuff that didn't, which isn't a lot considering Chan Gailey used the one-page playbook, it felt like, when Tua was on the field. They're going to improve his ability to check down this year or check out of things. And then I want to go back to what I said before and talk about his legs. It's, you know, when I'm helping, like, you know, I coach with kids and things like that. Like, it's when I'm working on something with a kid, the very first thing I look at, whether it's helping somebody at baseball, helping somebody with basketball, helping somebody with football skills, what, no matter the position in football, if your base isn't working right, you are going to struggle. Like, it doesn't matter if you're a lineman. It doesn't matter if you're a receiver. If it doesn't matter if you're a quarterback. It doesn't matter if you're a running back. If your legs are screwed up, nothing else matters. So the very first thing that you've got to get right is your legs. And Tua didn't have that last year. He was out there playing like the one-legged man and could get zero drive from his base. So I'm, and you know, I was skeptical of Tua coming in. I thought he was going to be okay. I was worried about the injury history. But what I saw from Tua last year, he passed the eye test. He did it without a good base, knowing that he had to correct that this offseason. Everything I've watched with him, he's got his legs where they need to be. So I'm excited because now we're going to get to see the Tua that everybody wanted, even if some people have gotten off the train way too early. You've got to remember, players got to develop. People forget about that.
Right. And the way I am on Tua right now is, now I'm not going to talk about how good I think he's going to be. I'm not gonna plant my flag anywhere. What I know is he needs to get to a certain level of success here in year two or year three, especially with the cast that they've built around him here. And my theory on Tua is that when you look at the injury, when you look at, you know, he had a very good touchdown to turnover ratio. He had 11 touchdowns in the air, three on the ground, and he had five interceptions only over those nine games. There are two reasons why Tua is getting so much criticism here going from year one to year two. Justin Herbert was taken one spot behind him, and it was Tua or Herbert heading up into the draft, let's be honest. And Herbert set the league record for passing touchdowns for a quarterback. That doesn't have anything to do with Tua necessarily, but that's what's going to be compared. And number two, Tua was taken out of two games. And I said at the time I didn't like it. I still don't like it. And if it weren't for those two factors, that's my theory, that he wouldn't be facing the amount of criticism heading into 2021 than he probably otherwise would have.
You know, I don't personally care about Justin Herbert right now. I mean, you look back at, what was it, 2012, 2013. After the first season in the NFL, there were people talking about the fact that maybe the Colts made a mistake taking Andrew Luck over RG3. I mean, RG3 came out firing guns a-blazing. And, you know, it's... So, Herbert came out more NFL-ready in the moment in an offense that favored his skill set. A simple offense that favored his skill set, and he had better weapons too. He wasn't throwing to Isaiah Ford. He wasn't throwing to Durham Smythe, a blocking tight end. Like, you know, it's Tua had like one weapon at the end of the year to throw to. His running backs were all hurt. The offensive line was shuffling due to injury. And I'm not making excuses for the guy, but it's, you know, you don't know year one most of the time what somebody's going to be. Peyton Manning sucked his first year. Guy was coming back from catastrophic injury. People need to just kind of chill, see where he gets. They need to take that Tua approach to it and just, you know, be chill, smile about it, and say, you know what, we're going to get there. We're good. Like, that, it's, you know.
I think we are making excuses, but they're good. Excuses.
There's a difference between excuses and reasons.
Correct. There's a difference between excuses and confronting reality. Yeah. The reality is Tua was in a car accident like injury back in the 2019 season. And there was questions even when he was drafted, is this guy even going to see the field this year? Well, he did. He recovered nicely and he had a promising rookie year given the circumstances. Now, what you said about Herbert's exactly right. I mean, Herbert had Keenan Allen, Hunter Henry, and Mike Williams to throw to. So that's a big difference than what Tua had to work with. And to go a little further on that, Tua had Devontae Parker and Mike Gesicki at wide receiver and tight end. They played the most snaps when he was in a quarterback. But if everybody remembers, Mike Gesicki from the Bengals game on was questionable or doubtful every week. And a lot of times he was a decoy out there on the field. He wasn't nearly close to what he was. Devontae Parker was questionable every week. You take a look, you know, he missed one game or two games. And then in a couple of the other ones against the Rams in week 8 and against the Chiefs in week 14, he didn't even play 30 snaps. So he was pretty much a decoy too. When you look past Parker and Gesicki, you take a look at the snaps with Tua last year. Lynn Bowden, 291. Durham Smythe, 283. Adam Shaheen, 215. Jakeem Grant, 233. Mack Hollins, 217. We're talking about five players there that are not even guaranteed roster spots and are going to be, those snaps are going to be taken by Jaylen Waddle, by Will Fuller, possibly by Hunter Long. Huge difference with the supporting cast this year.
Yeah, I mean, the final few weeks, it's Isaiah Ford had the second most number of snaps at wide receiver. Mack Hollins was right behind him. I mean, and you've got DVP, who's not really a separation type guy. Like, that's a joke to sit there and you know, Tua should have been throwing interceptions because these guys weren't that great other than DVP.
In the final three games, to capitalize on your point there, Isaiah Ford had 149 snaps in three games. Basically was playing almost every snap. Mack Hollins had 122 snaps in the final three games, was playing about 70% of snaps. So, yeah, exactly right. And you look at the Bills game, and yes, the Dolphins were destroyed in every facet of the game. There's no making excuses for that.
Not every. I mean, come on. They ran through Calvin Munson repeatedly.
The Dolphins, to their benefit, did not were dominated in every the Dolphins were dominated.
Lost handily. We'll go.
Yes, they did. I'm not quite sure what you mean by what you said, but
well, anyway. There was more to it than Munson, but Munson was like it felt like every big run the Bills had went right through wherever Calvin Munson was.
Well, he was a real Munson out there. That's for sure.
Don't be a Munson.
Don't be a Munson. Yeah, it's special teams. He's fine, but you know, But my point is that you look at that game there, and how many drops were there? It was an epic amount. Wow. Was it double digit? I mean, Mack Hollins, Isaiah, everyone was dropping passes in that game.
Everyone caught the ball like they had Chris Clemens' hands from years ago. And our longtime listeners will know exactly what I'm talking about, because that was a defensive back that was phenomenal at everything except for catching the ball. He caught like he wore boxing gloves.
He was a solid player who couldn't intercept anything. That's for sure. So now this year, the way I look at Tua's 2020 season, you know, you take a look game by game, and he got in week 8 against the Rams. And if you look at his stat line, you only see 93 yards passing. But the reality, too, is that it was the Dolphins put up 28 points in the second quarter and were up by 3 touchdowns the whole game. It's Tua's first start. You're not going to say, okay, go out there and sling it when we're up 2 or 3 touchdowns. Then the next week against Arizona, if you want to look at a game where you want to point to and say, that's the Tua that we need moving forward, it is that Arizona game. He goes 20 for 28, 248 yards, 2 touchdowns, and the numbers really don't do justice to how well he played throughout the game too. I mean, remember that when he juked out Buda Baker on that third down?
Oh yes.
Where the Dolphins then went up by a touchdown, ended up obviously winning the game.
Buda got juked by the one-legged man.
Yeah, and then the next week they play the Chargers in Week 10. And 15 for 25, 169 yards, two touchdowns. And he was a better quarterback than Justin Herbert on that day. There's no doubt about that. Then you had the Broncos game, which was ugly. And it shed some light onto what we've heard, Paul, over the last couple of weeks here where, you know, let's be honest, he was a rookie. He didn't know the playbook all that well and didn't really feel confident enough to check out of certain formations. He was kind of dead in the water against the Broncos.
He was, and I think some of it was him. Some of it was the rookie wall. Some of it was the one-legged thing. Some of it was Chan Gailey, and some of it was just, you know, it's not hard to scheme for such a simplistic playbook that they ran with him. And some of it is you're just going to come out and lay an egg once in a while, and that's what it felt like they did in that game. So I'm not going to get myself worked up over it. Like I said, my biggest thing, and I've said this since Miami drafted him, and thank you, Nizzle, and thank you, Cody. And Cody, we'll get to your question in a second. My thing with him last year was about the eye test, and it was a harder eye test because of the fact that, like I said, his base was all jacked up. And he passed it. He passed it with flying colors. He passed the eye test. He stayed healthy. The two biggest things I wanted. Ooh, Cap, I love you too. Good morning, good morning, good morning. So the question we've got right here is, if Tua struggles, would you sub Jacoby in?
No. It would have to be off. Let me tell you this. And thank you, Cody, for the donation there too, and Cap for life as well. So if you take Tua out of the lineup in any situation, not injury related, for Jacoby Brissett, we're done with him. Tua's done. All right. I don't want to hear, oh, well, he still has some promise. No, if you're willing to put Jacoby Brissett, who's probably the 35th to 40th best quarterback in the league, in there to try to revive your season, you're going quarterback in the 2022 draft. I don't expect that to happen. You've got to exhaust every opportunity here for Tua. But Brissett's a good backup. I mean, you look at his career, he is the prototypical high-end backup who's not going to, you know, he started 32 games in his career. His touchdown to interception ratio, 31 touchdowns thrown compared to 13 interceptions. He's the typical guy where if you've got a good defense, he's not going to turn the ball over and you're going to be in or winning a lot of football games.
Yeah, and there's three scenarios I want to see Brissett on the field. Garbage time. The in case of emergency break glass because Tua was injured, or a creative package that the offense is working with. Outside of those three scenarios, fourth scenario, preseason. Like, outside of those, you know, he's going to look great holding a clipboard, and he is a good in case of emergency break glass because, like you said, he doesn't turn the ball over. And I like him as a backup to Tua a little more than Fitz, just because you're not going to be running almost two different offenses and trying to put to install them both out there.
Right, and I'll tell you what, I'll go a step further. You take a look at some of these quarterbacks around the league that are starting this year. I mean, Drew Lock, Jalen Hurts, Andy Dalton, Tyrod Taylor. I would say Jacoby Brissett. I'd probably take over all of the players I just named for 2021. So it's a good situation for the Dolphins to be in, and Brissett is also going to help Tua there in the quarterback room as well. He's a veteran. He's been around a while. You know, if you remember back in 2016 when the Dolphins got blown out by the Patriots in Week 2, Jacoby Brissett was the starter. Didn't do a whole lot, but, you know, That was an ugly day, that's for sure. But no, at first I didn't like the idea of signing Brissett for 1 year, $5 million, but because I really in the first couple of days of free agency want to get starters, want to gather all your resources and really hit somebody big. But looking back now, I'm glad that they did sign him. So yeah, looking at where Tua needs to be this year, and this is why I don't plant my flag and say Tua's going to be great. This is what where he needs to be for me to feel comfortable with him as the Miami Dolphins starter moving forward here. So to throw out some over a 17-game season, this to me what Tua needs to do, he needs to be at over 4,100 passing yards, 27 or more touchdowns compared to 13 or less interceptions, 67% completion rate or better, and a playoff win. If Tua can get to that spot over the next 2 years, I'm going to give him 2 years, because it wouldn't make sense to draft a quarterback in the middle of the first round if he's kind of, if he didn't have the greatest year, but he's still promising. If he gets to that spot, then I'm going to be confident. If not, that's when I start to say, okay, maybe the Dolphins in the 2023 draft may need to look at another quarterback. But again, I think Tua is going to get it done. I'm with the supporting cast. The arrow seems to be pointing up here as we head into the summer here.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. It's I have for myself a target in my head of I want to see 4,000 plus passing yards with 10 or less interceptions, and I know that's a little bit lofty target on that one, but given his efficiency and accuracy, that's pretty much who Tua is. And I want to see 25 plus touchdowns at least, as far as that goes. I think he can get there this year, but like you said, 2 years, if he can get there within 2 years, I'm good. The playoff win thing, I'm not going to put all on him because it is a team sport. And there are too many variables there that could impact that in a way that can make it not his fault. But Miami should be a playoff team. They're a 10-6 team last year. They got better and markedly better this offseason. So I think Miami should be able to make the playoffs here, and a win should come along with that.
Yeah, and that's got to be the expectation here. Because, look, the Dolphins had one of the best defenses in the league last year, and this offense now is at the point where it has a lot of players that the Dolphins have drafted in the first 2 days of the draft or spent a lot of money on or have established themselves in the league here. I mean, there is going to be a major difference that I think people are going to see, too, as far as the skill positions between having, presumably, a healthy Devontae Parker and Mike Gesicki, Jalen Waddle, Will Fuller, and a healthy Myles Gaskin. Compared to last year, which was the reality for Tua, he had a worse offensive line than he's going to have this year. Myles Gaskin, when Tua got into the lineup, Myles Gaskin missed 5 of his first 7 games. So he didn't have Gaskin last year as that security blanket, that guy that was breaking out in his third NFL season, or second NFL season, excuse me. And you're going to have him instead of Savon Ahmed or Dwayne Washington. So it is just a lot of weapons to go around, and that's where Tua's got to be, because if he's calling plays at the line of scrimmage, he's spreading the field, he's taking advantage of one-on-one matchups. That's what he did at Alabama.
Yeah, and it's Miami's weapons, and this is something I thought about while you were talking there. Miami's weapons this season are designed to completely spread the defense out. Most of what Miami ran last year let the defense come up and kind of press into that 20-yard box against the team. And you press into that 20-yard box, you're going to get destroyed by somebody on one of the sides or the other. If you drop everybody back, you're going to get destroyed underneath. If you spread your defense out, Miami's got the guys that can pick holes in that. So I don't have faith that they would have been able to do that with Isaiah Ford and Mac Hollins last year, because even if they got open, like we saw, they just dropped the ball. So this should be a much more exciting offense to watch this year, and one that can take advantage of all the areas of the field.
Yeah, and I want to capitalize on something John Gordon said there in the chat, that we have to at least compete with the Bills, otherwise there's no point. 100% agree, because I'm a big believer that you've got to set your team to beat your division, and you've got to win your division, because if you don't, now you're in the wild card. Yeah, I know the Bucs won the Super Bowl last year as a wild card, but that's typically not a good, sustainable way to be successful. So yeah, when I look at what the Dolphins did this offseason, a weakness I see with Buffalo, even though they've got a very good starting secondary, it's not a very deep secondary. After you get past their fifth guy, which is Teron Johnson, their nickelback, you start really dropping down into players like Saron Neal, former Miami Hurricane Jaquan Johnson. They spent fifth and sixth rounders on Rashad Wild Goose and DeMar Hamlin this year. But my point is, if you spread that field four wide and you've got a Jalen Waddle against a Saron Neal, that's the position that they need to be in. And I think the Dolphins are going to have a lot of success if they spread the field and can protect Tua. They can take advantage of a very thin secondary for Buffalo on the back end, as well as against the Jets, who frankly can't cover anyone.
Yeah, and what I'll say as well, and I want to go back to something you talked about with the Bills game last year. You know, it's the I think it wound up being 12 or 13 drop passes in that game, which is insane. Those drop passes from guys like Isaiah Ford and Mac Hollins, and this is, I know this is our quarterback show, we're not trying to beat those guys up, but those stopped drives and gave the Bills offense more opportunities to go up against our defense in a short field scenario. And yeah, it just, it's those drops hurt our ability to stop them because our defense got worn out. Like, our offense couldn't stay on the field because every time there was a critical pass, it was bouncing off of the face masks or hands or chest of Isaiah Ford, Mac Hollins, and a couple of others, but those were the two biggest defenders in that game.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, the defense, that first quarter they played well, and then from the second quarter they started getting worse, and then third and fourth quarter, by the time Matt Barkley gets in there, they can't stop anybody. I mean, hey, it was a terrible defensive day. There's no doubt about it, regardless of how often they had to be on the field, especially with the stakes so high. But, you know, I'd say it was by far their worst defensive performance of the year. And yeah, they've got to challenge or beat Buffalo. I mean, that's what it comes down to. So as far as Tua individually, going back to that, is where he needs, there's several tiers here at the quarterback position across the NFL. I see six quarterbacks that I view as elite. Pat Mahomes, Aaron Rodgers, Josh Allen, Russell Wilson, Lamar Jackson, Tom Brady. And then after that, you take a look at that second tier of quarterbacks. You know, you've got about eight quarterbacks in there. Dak Prescott, Matt Ryan, Justin Herbert, Joe Burrow, Baker Mayfield, Kirk Cousins, Matt Stafford, Kyler Murray, and squeaking in there, I'll say, is Ryan Tannehill. That's the tier. That second tier is where Tua needs to be. And when I threw out those numbers of where Tua needs to be statistically, 4,100 yards, 27 touchdowns compared to 12 or 13 interceptions, 67% completion rate. That's only about 12th best in the NFL in those categories. So that's why it's important for Tua to be there at that spot. Because otherwise, if we're talking about Tua as the 20th, 21st, 22nd best quarterback in the league here, at the end of the 2022 2022 season, that's when you're going to start hearing the talk of, we need to get another quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, it's he should be a top 15 this year, given the weapons that he's got. And, you know, and given the fact that he should be able to play with a base now, given the fact of what we've seen in limited film, and I say limited film, even though there's been just a glut of it, I say that because, you know, a lot of things out there, if they're pre-recorded for you, have gone through about 20 different takes before they take the perfect one to illustrate. So, it's, you know, so he may be missing 19 throws and then hitting the 20th. But by all reports from folks at training camp, that's not the case. Actually, one thing I want to touch on real quick while we're talking about the throws, and no, it's not Reed Sinet, is Albert Wilson seems to be putting on a show with Tua here in early offseason.
Yeah, and that's exciting to hear. And if you cut Albert Wilson, which I've always been open to, and I thought might happen, you're only going to save, I think, what, $3.5 million? Somewhere, whatever we said, $2.5 to $3.5 million. Now, if he's got a good rhythm with Tua, and you know, you also look at Will Fuller being out the first week, absolutely keep him. No doubt about that. And you know, one advantage too to being out this long, I think, you know, when you're out of football and you opt out of last season, and you know, year before that, he missed a lot of time too. Is sometimes when you actually get back on the field, you can be fresh. And you know, if that's the case, yeah, he absolutely could be a good, you know, third or fourth option here for the Dolphins offense in week one.
Yeah, I'm in with it. I mean, if he looks like the player we signed initially, I'm 100% on board. And sometimes it is about the chemistry with the quarterback, because you know, you look at Patrick Laird, and when he was on the field limited action with Tua last year, the two of them really seemed to be in sync right off the rip.
Yeah, absolutely. And Samuel Rose in the chat said Tua had a 64.1% completion percentage in his rookie year. That sounds right to me. And
his legs were at 60%.
Yeah, his legs were okay. That makes sense. Yeah, and you know, you've got, to me, you've got to be in the mid to high 60s for to be an effective NFL quarterback. Otherwise, if you're in that, like at that high 50, you know, 60% range, you've got to be converting a lot of big plays. I mean, big chunk 30, 40, 50 yard plays. I don't think that's Tua's game. I think it's spreading the field and getting the ball quickly in the hands of his receivers. And that's what we've got to hope for here this year. Cause you know, Ryan Fitzpatrick, I'll tell you this, he did a great job of keeping the chains moving. And we didn't see that from Tua last year. A lot of reasons for that we've talked about that, but you can't have as many three and outs as you had as a rookie. The chains have to keep moving.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. And I think they will. I think he's got a better, like I said, I hate to keep going back to it, but he's got a far better receiving core overall this year. And I think that is going to open a lot of things up for him. And you know, you do see your completion percentage go up when you've got receivers that can catch the ball. And it's one of those funny stats that's tied to that fact. So, you know, getting Waddle out there, getting Fuller out there in week two, you know, getting that chemistry with Parker, Hunter Long and Mike Gesicki, I like that receiving core, and there's some depth pieces as well that have decent or better hands than what we had on the roster last year. So I'm 100% in. I think it's the easiest thing for Tua to raise this year is that completion percentage. It's, you know, throwing with no legs to guys with no hands, he still managed almost 65% completion percentage. So I'm completely good there.
Yeah, I think it's encouraging. And I continue to be mesmerized here by the last really 4 weeks of the season, just the snap count of some of these players here. You look at the New England game. The Dolphins won that game in Miami. It was a big win. And out of 72 snaps, Mac Hollins was on the field in 69 of them, Lynn Bowden, 65, Isaiah Ford, 53, Adam Shaheen, 43, Durham Smith, 42. I mean, there were times I would just laugh. They'd go in five wide, and they'd have Patrick Laird and Isaiah Ford and Mac Hollins out there. And I'm like, this is not – this, I mean, it's one thing to say it's an excuse and the quarterback should elevate the play around him. You got to take him. You got to make him better. No excuses. But this is a joke at a certain point. I mean,
you and Durham Smythe's the, you know, part of that five wide Patrick Laird.
You have a
Mac Hollins.
Isaiah, you have a five wide set, and you don't have a freaking NFL caliber wide receiver on the team. I mean, so
we were this close to putting Christian Wilkins in the five wide package. That's all I'm going to say there.
And that too is where I'm softening a little bit on kind of your stance of keeping Albert Wilson and or Jakeem Grant on the team, because I'm going to be angry if we get to the end of next season. You know, we get into week 16, week 17, and we see a similar type of situation. Like, you know what? Do we really need to save $2.5 million to cut Albert Wilson? Or, you know, need that extra $4 million.
But we'll have Seathan Carter.
Got Jakeem Grant. Yeah, gosh. They're going to run a five wide set with five tight ends based on what we saw last year. But no. And I like too that one thing I'm really looking forward to. It's kind of weird with the two offensive coordinator thing with Eric Studsville and George Godsey. But if you look at the sideline last year, when Tua was talking to a coach, he was talking to George Godsey. That was the guy that was in his ear. And I think Godsey is going to trust Tua as well as Eric Studsville to, when he gets his feet underneath them, to say, look, here's the game plan. Here are the plays here. Tua, you do what you need to do out there. Like, you're a smart kid. You can figure out, you can feel. And when Tua is feeling the game, that's, and has the weapons around him, that's when the Dolphins are going to have success on offense. But not until then.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. It's going to be fun to watch this year. It really is. I can't wait. Like, I think Tua is going to have a good year, and I think it's going to be fun to watch. And Cody, if you want to make that suggestion to them, please feel free. But yeah, it's they weren't fun to watch when they lined up. And I love my team. I do. You know this. I know this. I think most of our listeners know this. But it's not fun to watch Patrick Laird run out in pass patterns as a primary receiver on a route. You know, like, it's not fun to watch crap calls on offense to run the same continual goal line fade every time, ineffectively, like, because you don't have the receivers to pull it off. It's not fun to watch you try to run the ball with a couple of no names because you're on your fifth string running back. Like, it's not fun to watch, you know, the quarterback go out there and have basically the worst play call you could probably have for his skill set, because you designed your entire offense around an aging journeyman that you knew wasn't the guy.
Right. Yeah, that's absolutely. And, you know, Fitzpatrick was, I think, far better than a lot of us thought here. And you know, yeah. I'm very happy to see him starting again next year and starting in Washington.
He's cracking me up.
Not in the same division, not in the same – I mean, and if you're Washington, I'm really looking in August when – I mean, Greer always likes to trade. Mm-hmm. But you take a look at some of the guys on the bottom of the roster, the Jakeem Grants, the Preston Williams, Durham Smythe, Adam Shaheen. I think the Washington would be crazy if they don't pick up the phone and call the Dolphins and offer a late-round pick, you know, for one or two of these guys. You know, because I think they're good – they're good players, and they're not going to be out of work long if they get released. So, yeah, that's you know, we've talked about a lot here too, and you know, just another thing I don't want to hear, and again, stupid things people say, is, as long as the Dolphins are winning, if the Dolphins win 9 or 10 games, he's just a winner. You got to give him that. He's just a what? No. If Tua is not playing at a high enough individual level, then it's not good enough. And if people call these quarterbacks sometimes winners, and we see over and over again, it's not sustainable. They're not winners. They're just on a good team and along for the ride. Not so, it happened a little bit with Tua last year, but he did also have very good efforts too against like Arizona and against Cincinnati, where he absolutely was a reason that they won that game. In fact, the major reason they won that game. But I don't want to hear in a couple of years, Tua is a good enough quarterback on an otherwise great team. That's what would upset me.
Yeah, and I don't think you're going to hear that. I really don't. Like, and it's funny because you look around at this rookie class and you can see different problems that are cropping up for different guys, like from last year. Like, Joe Burrow is going to be the best guy to end up on IR every year. Like, that team just can't get the fact that their only problem last year wasn't skill players. It wasn't the quarterback play. It was that they couldn't keep Burrow upright. Like, and I don't care how good of a fighter you are, if you're just getting hit in the face repeatedly over and over and over and over and over again, eventually you're going to get broken. Like, and it's going to get a little easier for that to happen every time. And so Joe Burrow may end up being, or may not be the best quarterback from that class, which is not to discount either Herbert or Tua, but his career is probably going to be drastically shortened. Kind of like when Matt Schaub played for the Texans years ago And he just got decked over and over and over and over again and started just turning into a pick six machine. Like, it's, you know, it was almost like watching The Water Boy where they're trying to throw the ball to Bobby Boucher. Like, just like, get away from me. No. Make him stop.
David Carr.
Yes, that's who I was thinking of, not Matt Schaub. Good call.
Yeah, well, you're kind of right on Schaub. His offensive line did start breaking down at the end of his career when he was throwing a lot of pick sixes.
Yeah, but Carr got destroyed and turned into, like, the turnover machine. Like, he was Oprah with cars.
I think Carr got sacked 72 times in his rookie year. I'm not positive. It's like, you're not going to come back from that. But this will be it's a good point. It's an interesting experiment, not just with the Bengals, but with the Dolphins, because either one of those teams drafting at 5 or 6 could have taken the best offensive tackle in the class, which was Penei Sewell. We won't get into that again. They didn't. The Bengals took Ja'Marr Chase. The Dolphins took Jaylen Waddle. That doesn't mean it's the wrong decision, but the interesting experiment is going to be, which one do you pick? Do you draft the offensive lineman to protect the quarterback, or do you give the young quarterback another option so that they can get the ball out of their hands quicker, which minimizes what the offensive line has to do? That's going to be the interesting thing with the Bengals and the Dolphins this year.
Yeah, it is. I can't wait to see Tua, healthy Tua with weapons. Like, it's, you can't handicap a rookie year any more than what Miami did with Tua last year. And so, like, replace him in a few games. Like, check. Run him out there with no legs. Check, check, check. Run him out there with Isaiah Ford and Mac Hollins just dropping passes left and right. Oh, yeah, we got that check mark. Run him out there with Chan Gailey calling a crappy offense because he likes the other guy better. Big old check mark. Like, it's all of those things, and he still managed to do well, still managed to keep his head up, still managed to be the kid that he is. I'm intrigued. I'm interested. I want to see where we get to this year with this kid. Because,
yeah,
I mean, you take all of those things, and they've answered them this offseason. Every single one of them.
They've set the table for Tua. There's no doubt about it. And, again, it goes back to what we were saying before is, you know, when Tua wasn't successful last year, and he had a terrible game against the Raiders, and then the Dolphins got crushed in Week 17, which I don't really think was Tua's fault. You can call them excuses, but I don't call them excuses. I say it's just reality. I mean, yeah.
People have gotten too fluid with that with that stupid word these days.
Excuses?
Yeah.
Yeah, right. I hear that on these shows. Oh, there are no more excuses for Tua. Like, what? The guy played 9 games in a season where he wasn't supposed to play. God, I need to stop watching TV. I need to stop listening to people.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, because that's not just a TV thing. Like, it's you give a valid reason for anything anymore. Like, somewhere in the past 2 years, there's no such thing as a valid reason for something. Like, it's – and you can't analyze anything without valid reasons. Sometimes you're not making an excuse. You're giving a reason why something happened. Now, does that mean that if that reason is taken away, they're going to correct it? Not necessarily. But – they're going to have a better opportunity, and that's what we're talking about with Tua here. You know, is he's got the tools this year. He's got the physical actual ability to walk this year that set the table for him to have the opportunity to do better. And I'm excited to see what happens here. I think Miami could really be onto something with this kid, especially given what he was able to overcome for what he was able to do last year.
Absolutely. And, you know, we're going to grade these positions. What's really the point, I'd say, of grading this one, but we are, you know, if we're judging, if Tua doesn't take the next step forward, let's say he doesn't, then he's a C or C plus quarterback. Let's be honest. I mean, if C is average, you know, that's really what he was last year at best. But if we judge him based on the numbers that I think he's going to get to here in the next, you know, if not next year, then the year after, which is the 4,100 plus passing yards, 27 touchdowns compared to, you know, 12, 13 interceptions, may or hopefully less, 67% completion rate, and a playoff win. That's where I think the Dolphins are going to get with Tua. Then we're talking about a B or B plus quarterback. So it's kind of hard to judge based on where he is compared to where he's going to, we think, be next year with more weapons.
Yeah, for me, I'm going to go with a B plus here. It's for, look, was he at a B plus level last year? Not yet. But I'm grading based on the eye test, grading on...
You're grading on what you think he's going to be this year. That's
right. And gotcha. I think it's a grade that could drastically go up.
Gotcha. Because if you were grading on where he is now, then I would strongly disagree with you. Yeah. But if you're, you know, hey, if we have to take everything else into account, which I don't think we're doing our job if we don't, then I completely agree with you. Thanks for joining us, everybody. And hey, give us some feedback too on how the mic volume's doing. We've had some issues with that over the last couple of weeks with some setting changes, and it's hard to see during the show because I can hear Paul perfectly well and he can hear me perfectly well, but after the show, once it's up, it's up. So give us some feedback on that. And we really appreciate you all joining us here today. Paul, anything else you want to say in addition to what we've talked about?
John Yurick, we love you. We can't wait to see it too. And and let us know any questions you guys have that you want us to answer in the comments or you name it. Make sure you guys like, make sure you guys subscribe. It helps us out tremendously. And yeah, man, I'm excited. We're getting closer and closer and closer to actually having football again. And I'm so ready to see this product on the field. It's going to be a fun season, I think.
It will. And we're going to look at the running back position here next week, and one that's gotten a lot of scrutiny here in the off season, but also is to me a position that it's not one of the positions you go for with, you know, a high first round pick. It's a position you hope that you can find out there instead of investing heavily in. So we'll take a look at that. Be sure to join us on Facebook, Twitter, all of our social media outlets, as well as the Fansided Network and FinFanatic.com. I'm Brian Catt, NFL on Twitter. Paul is Fanatic_pick. If it's not on the right side and it's not on the left side, it is on the Fin side.